You lot may all be internationals and have won all the domestic honours there are to win. But as far as I'm concerned, the first thing you can do for me is to chuck all your medals and all your caps and all your pots and all your pans into the biggest flipping dustbin you can find, because you've never won any of them fairly. You've done it all by blummin' cheating.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graeme Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Yeah, all the confetti is all settled now, all the pitch invaders have gone. Yeah, it's the end of another Premier League season. And it's another season where City win again. It's all settled down now. We had a few crazy years when teams were winning it and they were never retaining it, but now the Premier League has finally grown up. It's now a senior league, like any of the other ones in Europe now, and it's now dominated by one club, which is what everyone needs. It gives you a sense that there is stability in the league. It shows a league of strength, doesn't it, Terry?
Absolutely. You only have to look across the water to other leagues to just see how vibrant and unfarmer-like those leagues are when they are dominated many, many years over by the same club.
Yeah, and it is comforting to know that the same team is going to win it every year, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's really good, because what you want in your life is predictability, because once you've got predictability, you know, everything's fine. It is interesting, though, is this the handing over of the pitchfork from the German Farmers League to the English Farmers League now? It's the ceremonial passing of that implement. Yeah, it's good to know that we are now the new Bundesliga. Brilliant.
I think perhaps more the new Serie A, I think, dominated by a team that's so obviously cheating, but no one wants to do anything about it.
There is that, yes.
That's kind of the underlying narrative that I've been looking at for the last 24 hours. Well, don't care. They cheated anyway. Blah. Yes, all right. There's a lot of Arsenal in my timeline. I appreciate that. But the thing is, I suppose, with broadcasters and the media alike, they can't really get too much into this because this is their lifeblood. They can't really say, oh, well, you know, City win again. It's like effectively no one winning really again, yet again. Because they've got to keep the Premier League as something that is sellable, as something you should be interested in, not as something that you're going to lose interest in because City keep on winning it all the time. Terry, what's been your feeling of the sort of narrative that's gone around City's win?
You know, I think that they try to portray City and to extol City's achievements of winning so many of these titles in a row and sort of trying to, you know, use the golden age narrative. We're in a golden age of one particular club, you know, as opposed to the kind of, you know, well, this is a league where anyone can beat anyone, to a league where anyone can beat anyone apart from Manchester City. And isn't that great? Anything that they can really sort of like do to try and keep people engaged. I'm sitting here thinking I'm not altogether certain that it would make any difference if Manchester City were found to be cheating at all. I don't think it would necessarily undermine the credibility of the Premier League or its commercial viability. I think if it was Liverpool or Manchester United in that boat, then I think it would be much, much more serious because they've got much, much bigger fan bases. But I think that Sky are in a sort of odd situation, because although City have grown a lot as a football club in terms of its fan base and its fan following, it's still pretty far behind, I would suggest, a lot of the traditionally big clubs. And I'm not altogether certain that I think if it was up to Sky, they would rather, they were being honest with themselves, they'd rather the old school, the old guard be on this tear. I think they would have had a lot more fun with their coverage. And I would think they would have probably found it a lot more lucrative if this had been Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool dominating the league, which some may argue should have actually been the case were it not for the fact that City were there, whether or not they are found to have cheated or otherwise. And I do wonder whether or not there's that feeling that Now, they're not necessarily capitalising on all of this as much as they could do if it was Liverpool or United, or dare I say Arsenal, dominating the league, but certainly those two.
Yeah, and what do you think? What's been your feeling about the general narrative of this historic fourth title?
If I'm honest with you, I think it's quite concerning, because you don't want to have a situation where you've just got one team that's just sweeping everything up. I mean, it was interesting last season when they did the treble. That was good to see, because they'd achieved something that they hadn't done before. All right, four wins in a row hasn't been done as well, so I'm kind of arguing against myself there. But I think it sets a precedent that it looks like it's going to be like this from now on in. And as a football fan that lives in England and watches a lot of Premier League, that's going to be really, really boring. And I have come across, I might have even mentioned it on the pod, that people I've spoken to have started to say it is getting a bit boring. The Premier League's a bit boring. Starting to turn their attentions into the EFL or even into other competitions abroad. I think it's really dangerous for the Premier League as well, because they charge so much for rights to it that if it's just one team, and you're right, not the most fashionable team to watch. Not the most fashionable team in terms of, you know, history and legacy and things like that. They are nouveau riche and possibly cheating. And I do think, just to counter your point there, Terry, that their presence as the champions now, four times champions, with these 115 charges hanging over their head, casts a shadow over not just their achievement, but across the Premier League as well, because that's got to come out at some point. And I was reading today, it might not even come out until the spring, like as in next spring.
I was going to say, we are in spring.
Yeah. I know, it's going to be the spring. Brilliant. That'll be interesting. Yes. But no, it may not happen until next year, which again makes me kind of fill in the gaps with conspiracy that maybe they're trying to sort something out here so it punishes City but doesn't compromise the integrity of the league. But I mean, there's a whole pot on that when it actually happens, isn't there? So yeah, I suppose in summary, I find it really concerning. And not a really exciting and interesting way to end what should be a really vibrant competition.
Yeah, well, the final day was, I guess it was dramatic. I mean, the build-up for it, tried to build it up. But City have gone on an absolute tear in the closing stages of the season. People are analysing, where did it all go wrong? Did Arsenal blow it, or are City just unstoppable? And basically, Arsenal won 17 out of their 19 games in the second half of the season. There's not a lot more you can really do about that. The one game that stands out, obviously, is the Villa game, but losing one game out of the last 19. And the other game, of course, was dropping points against City because they didn't go there to win, apparently. That's another narrative arc that's been doing the rounds today, and one that's been lapped up by lots of people to say, yeah, well, this is what happens when you don't try and beat your closest opponent. I think City have only won once at Anfield in all this time of their dominance. So it's an argument that gets picked apart and is being picked apart on social media. So it's not really one that we have to dwell on that much. They always seem to do this, though, don't they? They always seem to just go on and do whatever they need to do to get over the line. And this is really the first time Arsenal have genuinely challenged. They challenged last season, they just didn't have the stamina for it. This season, it was a period around Christmas where they lost, I think, 3 games out of 5 and left them playing catch-up for the rest of the campaign. And they needed 17 wins to be in a position to get into the final day, being 2 points behind City. Yeah, as an Arsenal fan, it's disappointing, but I really didn't think we were going to win it from quite a long way out. I think even before the Villa game, it didn't look promising. And when it got to the final bit where the last 3 games that City had, they were playing Fulham, Tottenham and West Ham. 3 clubs who, out of a possible 18, Arsenal took 8 points from those 3 clubs this season. So that shows you where a lot of the ground was lost for Arsenal. And of course, they were at the fag end of their season. They were never going to get anything against City. I think Tottenham put a decent performance in. Had Son scored that late goal, we could be looking at a completely different outcome. So very, very, very fine margins. I don't think you can point at any individual point to say, oh, this is where Arsenal lost it, or this is where City won it. City won it by winning lots and lots of games. That's how they do it. That's how the league works, I think, isn't it, Terry?
That's exactly how leagues work, Graham. It is determined by a points total at the end of the season. And there are various points throughout the course of the season which you can look to, and they all really, to be honest with you, have equal weight, because that's literally how it is. All the points are applied equally. Okay, when you're telling the story of the season, then yeah, I think it's perfectly legitimate to look at specific results and say, well, this is where you feel it goes. I always, one of my favourite ones is you lose to the team you really should beat. And if you lose to that team, that's it. That's kind of like, that's where the turning point is. And you go, oh, well, here you go. That's also nonsense, but it tells a nice story. And I think it's important to remember that as content creators, that primarily our job isn't to explain how and why things happen. It's to tell the story in our own way. And I think that that's why you look at these things and look at these games. Look at the Villa game. Say, yes, it was the Villa game. Even Arteta said, ah, it was the Villa game in his press conference. It wasn't the Villa game. but, you know, it's easy, and I think it's comfortable and comforting to do that, particularly when you just walked off a pitch and you've just lost the title. And he's perfectly, if anyone is entitled to tell stories and to spin false narratives about his season, it's Mikel Arteta in that moment. He won't analyse it like that, though. That's for the analysts and not the storytellers.
Jan, what do you think of the talk of last week about Tottenham and about Ange Postecoglou not really getting the fans wanting the Spurs to lose?
I thought he handled himself across that as he was, clearly he grasped what was going on. But I think he was really disappointed that he had to give it any kind of airtime, to be honest with you, because he's a professional football coach and he is there to win football matches. And this one should be no different. And as well as that, had they won that, they would have been in the Champions League now, wouldn't they?
Oh, they would indeed, yes.
So anybody who thinks that they chucked that game is an idiot. And I think anybody who would... Well, this is difficult because I did kind of go on a bit of a journey with this one, thinking the Spurs fans are absolute idiots cheering and doing the Poznan and things like that because their team is losing and it means Arsenal won't win the title. But it did make me think, well, hang on, Jan, what happens if that was Newcastle, who will eventually win the title? There's no doubt about that, with their limitless resources. If Sunderland are in some way, and this is quite a leap, but if Sunderland are in some way able to prevent that from happening by losing the game, what would I do? And that was a lonely, lonely place to be, let me tell you. Who am I to judge? You know, I would imagine there's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek about the behaviour of some of the fans, and maybe also not. But I think Postecoglou got it right. I got a lot of respect from the way that he said that. You know, he probably gets enough of interference from above. In fact, he does, as I was reading the other day, that he doesn't need it from the fans as well, telling him how to pick his side and how to go about things. I got a lot of respect from him for that. And, you know, you're right. They went out there and gave it a good go. And you're right, if that Sun v Ortega thing had gone a different way, then we could actually be talking about how great the Premier League is because it throws up all these different champions every now and again. But it didn't, and we're not. That's true. And it's shit.
Yeah, it is. Terry, what did you think about Postecoglou's whole frame of mind before, during and after that result?
I think it's possible that Ange just may have overstepped things just a bit in his post-match remarks, because I think he was quite upset and I think he was quite disappointed with the fans. I understand why he would be disappointed with the fans. I would think that Tottenham Hotspur are a senior club. They're a big club. They've got a massive brand new stadium. They've got an engaged fan base. It's the penultimate game of the season and there's a Champions League game on the line and you're playing the champions. There's plenty of reasons why you should be getting right behind the players, becoming fully engaged with that match. There's plenty of reasons why you should, but they weren't, and they simply weren't. And I don't think that it's healthy for a coach to even slightly imply criticism of your paying supporters. If that is how they feel, then that's the end of it. And that feeling and attitude is based upon generations of watching Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. And that really illustrates to Ange Postecoglou, and I think that that's probably what he means when things are pretty fragile, is that that is the scale of the task that he faces in turning that around, is getting to the penultimate game of a season and you're playing the treble winners, the champions, and there's a Champions League spot on the line, and that the fans are four square behind you, and who cares what consequences there are for any other club. And I would like to think there's no direct comparison, unfortunately, because I think the Palace Brighton rivalry is not as strong, I think, and the dynamic, the relationship between the two rivals is different to Arsenal and Tottenham and indeed Sunderland and Newcastle. But I would think that Palace fans wouldn't be like that. But that is because the character of the club is different and their history and their story is very different. And again, it's all going back to stories and narratives. It doesn't help that this was the big story for the days leading up to the game. And that this was, and again, let's all dump on the media again, because it's fun. but you know, this is like, this was the story. This is dominating the headlines. This is dominating the narrative, the conversations. The public conversation is that, you know, will Tottenham chuck the game? Should Tottenham fans, to all intents and purposes, support Manchester City in a situation like this? And perhaps that's contributed to the atmosphere in there. But I don't want to be critical of Tottenham fans because they're perfectly entitled to be how they want to be.
Yeah, certainly.
But I would like to think that in the future, that by the time Ange has seen through that project, that they will have bigger fish to fry and be less concerned about their rivals.
Hmm. I wonder if some crazy, crazy made-up world where Arsenal are in a position where Tottenham might win the title. And that's just too far-fetched. I'm not going to go any further with that. I can't even. It's just weird. It's like what would happen if pigs could fly, isn't it? It's a crazy notion.
Jan's scenario is feasible.
Yeah.
It's feasible that Sunderland will at some point in the near future be promoted to the Premier League, and it's also feasible that Newcastle United will be challenging for the Premier League title. So that scenario is not entirely out of the question. Maybe, you know, it's going to take a bit of, you know, quite a coincidence, but it is not out of the question at all.
Yeah.
And yeah, it would be really interesting to see that. My gut's instinct is, and Jan, feel free to contradict me, that I'm not altogether certain that the fans of Sunderland would behave that differently. situation.
Well, you're shining a light on that lonely place I mentioned earlier, Terry. That is the conclusion that not just my fellow Wearsiders, but also myself as well. I think I would be exactly the same. So yeah, that's exactly right. But yeah, what was that crazy, crazy talk, Graham? I just need to pull you up on that. Of Tottenham being...
It's end of season.
It feels like an acid flashback, doesn't it? All discombobulated.
Was that some kind of pitch for some kind of dystopian science fiction series on Apple TV Plus?
Kind of, yeah.
With Rebecca Ferguson. Where am I? Tottenham are top of the league. And it's May.
Oh, my God. I mean, I watch a lot of dystopian stuff, but even that would be that's too dark to go to, isn't it?
Dogs and cats living together. Yeah, all right. Let's move on to ground that is far more stable for us, okay? Let's talk for perhaps the last time this season about VAR, because there was massive, massive news, wasn't there, last week, when it was revealed that the Premier League are going to be doing away with VAR from next season. Yes, next season there will be no VAR in the Premier League, which will make it far more entertaining anyway, whoever wins it, no matter how much they cheat, because it doesn't matter, because we're going back to the good old days of no VAR. Well, it's got to go through a vote first, but that's got to be a shoo-in, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, come on, hold your horses there, Graham. Don't get carried away. Don't get carried away. There has to be a vote. And it has to be, is it 16 to 4, is it?
Or
is
14 to 6, yeah.
Just 14 clubs need to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Yes, Wolverhampton Wanderers are done with VAR, and they've gone to the rule book and said, according to this, I just imagine like Wolverhampton Wanderers people sort of like going through their library of books, like an episode of Buffy or something like that, and say, look here, there's this arcane law here that says that we can challenge any rule. They cast a spell and summon a demon. And, you know, I think that's pretty much how the Premier League works.
Mm.
It's absolutely terrific. It was a wonderful bombshell, that news. Completely welcome. Obviously, you know, just in case you don't know, listeners, that's not what's happening. There's going to be a vote. It's going to be in June. At the next meeting, it's in Harrogate, I think, is it?
Yeah, really. It's a lovely spot,
yeah,
Harrogate.
Beautiful, yeah, absolutely. Ooh,
lovely tea rooms.
And they're going to decide. And the Wolves laid out a list of all the reasons why they think it should be scrapped. And all of them have been covered at one point or another on this podcast down the years.
They have. Shall I read out Wolves' nine commandments? What it perceives to be unintended negative consequences. impact on goal celebrations and the spontaneous passion that makes football special. Well, yeah, they got that one right, haven't they?
Yep.
Frustration and confusion inside stadiums due to lengthy VAR checks and poor communication. Well, been a problem since day one, that, isn't it?
Totally. Yep.
A more hostile atmosphere with protests, booing of Premier League anthem and chants against VAR.
Yep.
Overreach of VAR's original purpose to correct clear and obvious mistakes, now overanalyzing subjective decisions and compromising the game's fluidity and integrity.
Yes, big point that. Massive point that. Massive. Almost worth saying twice. I mean, don't, but it's almost worth saying twice.
It would make it around 10 then, wouldn't it? Diminished accountability of on-field officials due to safety net of VAR, leading to an erosion of authority on the pitch. This is Wolves having a dig at referees there, I think.
Yeah, basically.
Continued errors despite VAR, with supporters unable to accept human error after multiple views and replays, damaging confidence in officiating standards. Is that building bridges or is that burning them again?
I think that's giving and taking away at the same time.
Bit of a shit sandwich, that one, isn't it? Disruption of the Premier League's fast pace with lengthy VAR checks and more added time, causing matches to run excessively long. That's a good one as well. Constant discourse about VAR decisions, often overshadowing the match itself and tarnishing the reputation of the league. Erosion of trust and reputation with VAR fueling completely nonsensical allegations of corruption. Yes,
yeah.
That's to you, Forrest. Okay, that one's for you.
That really is.
Yeah.
It's a massive dig at Forrest.
Yeah, you won't be getting Forrest vote now, will you?
No.
I mean, to be fair, the whole thing's a big dig at Forrest, really, because this is exactly what you should do if you've got a problem with how things work. You go through the proper channels and you put out a reasoned and well-thought-out set of ideas and suggestions of why you should change it. You don't just go on Twitter and whinge a bit.
Yeah, you don't just get Mark Clattenburg to just shitpost everywhere. Just like do it by the book, Forrest. By the book. We'll see what happens, I suppose.
Yeah. So is this going to be one vote for and 19 against, do we reckon, Jan?
From the articles I've read on it, the majority of clubs are in favour of retaining VAR. No one's naming names, but it's basically the big clubs quite like it. And the little clubs don't. I don't think it'll go through. It would make the Premier League an outlier amongst the top leagues. I think even in all of the European leagues, I think only Sweden, they didn't want to do it, which is great. Not the biggest league, but I admire their stance on that. So I don't think they'll do it for that reason. And it does make it a bit strange as well, because you'd be playing competitions that do have it in Europe, but not here. But then again, we do that here, don't we? Because the playoff finals, where you don't have VAR during the season, but you have it at the playoff final, which is ridiculous anyway. So, I think in summary, Wolves will be my new favourite club, as I think they're everyone's new favourite club. But I think that they're going to be a lone voice, dare I say, a lone wolf.
Oh,
nice.
Thanks.
It's astoundingly unlikely that 14 clubs will vote to get rid of VAR. But if they get 6 or 7 clubs wanting VAR gone, where does that leave the PGMOL, the Premier League and VAR in England?
If this is going to be a successful VAR and a repudiation of the criticism of VAR, then it has to be not unanimous, but it has to be, just Wolves basically voting for it. And I'm not altogether convinced that that is what will happen. I think there's a good chance that there will be, perhaps 5 or 6. And I think you're right, I think, Graham. I think if you get to 6 or 7, then that is a significant number of clubs who do not want VAR, and that will undermine VAR's integrity, if indeed it's any possible to do so. But also not so much the process, but the integrity of the principle of VAR. If there isn't a unified mind as to how we officiate our games in this league, then I think that can cause trouble. What that actually means will happen is slightly more difficult to predict, because you'd like to think that it will create enough seeds of doubt in people's minds to think, well, maybe in a couple of years' time, another club comes around and says, well, let's just do this again. I think it means that VAR and the PGMOL have got to be able to respond to that criticism. There have been examples in the Champions League, particularly in the latter rounds of the Champions League, where VAR has been very, very light touch indeed. And I think that they might sort of think, well, maybe what we should do is we really back away from everything apart from the genuinely clear and obvious, and then we just like don't do anything else. But I also wonder, Gwen, whether or not there's a possibility that it might undermine the PGMOL management as well, if it transpires that there's a strong feeling amongst the league, because I think it's also that could well be a vote of no confidence in the PGMOL. And I'm thinking specifically of Howard Webb. And I don't believe that Howard Webb has done a very good job. It's difficult to say. I'm not there on a day-to-day basis. But when you consider the amount of controversy that there has been this season and the number of gaffes that there have been on VAR this season, you know, really on his watch, then it does call into question his ability to be able to manage that team, and that perhaps they should have gone for someone who is a little bit less interested in the public eye, less interested in putting a face on the PGMOL, and more interested in trying to manage referees and get the best out of them.
On just end of season vibes alone, do you think this has been the worst season for VAR in the Premier League?
Possibly yes, because clubs have become a lot more vocal about it, culminating in Wolves putting forward this motion. But you've seen, you know, Forest disgrace themselves over it, but it looks like they've got rid of Clattenburg now. But Liverpool, Arsenal and Wolves have all made statements about VAR and threatened to take things further and things like that happened this season. So I don't think it's any worse in terms of the decisions that have been made or the impact of it destroying the soul of football, which it's been doing consistently for the last, is it 5 years? Is it the fifth year we've just had? You know, I don't think it's any worse from that point of view, but I think that it's actually starting to get to the point where fans are openly protesting against it. It's much more in the discourse. It's much more negative in discourse that you have with people. And the fact that the clubs are making statements about it and actually put something to the Premier League now, I think shows that it's reached a point which is far more interesting for people who watch this kind of thing, who are interested in VAR, now than it's ever been. So I'm not sure if that quite answers your question. I certainly think that this isn't dead, even if the vote goes down. I think Terry's right. If there's more than kind of five, you've got a real problem. You need a second referendum then, don't you?
Terry, do you think this has been the worst year for VAR in the Premier League?
I have watched more Premier League this season than I think I've watched in a number of seasons. And what strikes me is that I feel, and I may be wrong about this, but I feel that the English referees use VAR differently to what they do, for example, in Germany. I'm not suggesting that they're incapable of rickets in Germany and that there isn't VAR controversy in Germany, but it feels like, despite what Howard Webb saying about not wanting to re-referee games, I think actually that there's been a lot of that. And of course, I think a lot of that behind that question, Graham, is of course, is the Darren England, Liverpool and Spurs thing, which was a complete and utter failure of process. Despite him saying that it was a good process, it was actually a really, really bad process. This, I think, has done an awful lot to undermine the credibility, not just of VAR, but the VAR, the individuals who are in charge of this. And it also, I have to say, it speaks ill of the people. I don't, you know, it's not a particularly good reflection on anyone on there. And it's interesting because there's quite a big, not big industry around it now, but like, you know, there's people working on VAR now, you know, Premier League Productions who managed VAR owned by IMG, you know, who in Stockley Park, who now have quite a big setup there. And, you know, they will be looking at this vote, obviously, with a great deal of interest, because if it's passed and VAR is scrapped, then it reduces their particular influence as well. So there's and IMG are a very, very big player in the sporting world and particularly in sports commerce and sports business. And so it's, you know, Wolves are taking on some fairly, fairly big hitters by doing this, interestingly. And it will be very interesting to see what happens. I would love to think that they will vote against it, but I do feel that I'm fantasizing there, unfortunately. They will convince themselves that, again, as for all the reasons that you said, Jana, which I won't repeat, that it is not in their broader interests to ditch VAR, that they are not going to be the first one to do it. But if they can be persuaded that actually there are good commercial reasons for not having VAR, it'll be cheaper, for one. And also it will provide perhaps a degree of authenticity that the Premier League likes to promote about itself and see itself, that it's consistent with the Premier League brand to not have VAR. to make it a little bit more like the Wild West. Maybe they can win the day, but I would love to see that deck, but somehow I'm not altogether convinced it will be enough to convince particularly the big hitters who have an awful lot of interest. I assume that the promoted clubs get a say over this. So it will be really interesting also to see what the promoted clubs think about this too.
Mm.
I don't know if it will be made, if the vote will be made public or whether it's secret.
I can imagine that there would be a lot of interested parties that would try to make this a closed ballot so that there isn't much more rising. I think it would be quite unpopular if it was 19-1, then everyone will know that their club voted to keep VAR.
Yeah.
Then you know that your club has voted to keep something that you hate. That's not going to prove popular, so I can imagine that they will try to keep it quiet. I don't think VAR has had any worse season than it has in all the time it's been in the Premier League. I think what has changed this time is Howard Webb and the new era of openness. It's just highlighted the errors it's made even more. It's just showing the system up. Never before have we seen the system being so reactive. You will see a challenge that was, say, overturned by VAR and turned into a red card 1 week, and then all of a sudden there'll be outcry about it, and then you won't see another red card like that for about a month until people start breaking legs, and then all of a sudden the red cards start coming out again. That's what it feels like to me at the moment. It just is pandering to that level of instant reaction. And the TV show with Michael Owen, I've never watched a single episode of that. I don't know how popular it is, but I don't think that has helped in anywhere at all. And we've got clubs in open revolt against officiating, and it just seems bizarre that we've got to this stage to me. There is a new thing that is coming out, though, and FIFA have trialled this new idea, their latest improvement to VAR, and a way that perhaps might make it cheaper, which might make it infect lots of other leagues and go down the various pyramids in different countries. And this is a new challenge system which they announced. It was actually trialled at a youth tournament last week, very successfully, according to Pierluigi Collina. But then he would say that, wouldn't he? So, yeah, this new challenge system, apparently it works like this. Coaches get two challenges a game. If your challenge is upheld, then you retain that challenge to use later. And instead of it going to another referee at Stockley Park, it would go to the match referee, would go over to a video screen, look at the incident again, re-referee, of course, as we talked about earlier, and then make his decision. Guys, is this a good idea? Or is this yet another one with a lot of unintended consequences that will come from it? Jan?
I think it sounds a lot better than what we've got at the moment. So I will say that. But just to continue with your infection point analogy that you said there, this is how viruses do it, don't it? They evolve so they can spread. And the next thing you know, you've got this further down the pyramid, which I suppose does answer a point that a challenge on VAR that we often cite in that it makes it for a different game. But I mean, you can't get this everywhere. You couldn't have it in non-league. I think the unintended consequences, Grim, as you pointed out there on the intro to this, is that we could just have chaos everywhere. Not good fun chaos, which we like. Football should be chaotic, and you know it should be a little bit more interesting. But this is just trying to make everything perfect when football already was perfect. That's why it's such a popular sport. Yes, it's a bit more intelligent than what we've got at the moment. Probably would be a bit more measured in how it was carried out. You wouldn't have people going to, you know, screaming about the decision, because you'd have to think about it a little bit more, wouldn't you? You'd have to kind of go, do I go for this one? Was it a dead cert? Are you sure about it? A bit like you see with cricket, although cricket is a bit more sedate and you've got time to have that conversation. Maybe a step in the right direction, but the road to hell is paved with good intentions, isn't it?
Yeah, personally, I think it doesn't improve anything. I would say that if you get a challenge system, it's not going to stop coaches criticising referees post-match. They're going to hate it even more if they challenge something, if they've thought about it and said, right, I'm definitely sure that that was a wrong decision. Here's my challenge. And it goes against them. That's just going to incense them even more, because not only do they lose the decision, they lose one of their challenges as well. I can see it becoming very, very, very unpopular and causing even more problems. Terry, what do you think?
Well, I welcome it on that basis, because if anything, it would hasten the ending of and the scrapping of VAR. It doesn't address the central issue and the central objection, in my view, as to why VAR is a bad thing, because that is the disconnect that it creates between the professional game, the top level of the professional game, and the grassroots game. It doesn't end the problem of adjusting laws in football to accommodate VAR, which is something which is played by only what 0.0001 of the population of the world that plays football. Only a tiny, tiny, tiny percent of it actually plays VAR. And yet we have all the rules that we have and the laws that we have are increasingly becoming catered to VAR. It's completely nonsensical. And VAR should be just scrapped on that basis. Your point, Graham, is absolutely correct. The two-challenge system, it'll just be embarrassing for coaches because they'll end up being exposed for not understanding the laws of the game that they're supposed to be coaching on. It'll give another metric for managers to be measured by, how successful they are or and otherwise of making those kind of calls, which I don't think would be welcome. It won't resolve arguments or controversies because that's the central point is the laws of the game are so fluidly interpreted that nobody actually knows what the real laws of the game are. It is strictly a matter for the referee's opinion. That is the whole point of the laws of the game. It addresses none of these issues. All it does is it's just Malibu Stacey's new hat. It's just another way of dressing up VAR to make it more palatable for people. And the people who hate it will continue to hate it, and the people who like it will continue to like it. I don't see any change whatsoever beyond the fact that I imagine, yeah, it will cost cut. Yeah, I would suggest to you. But then if you're only going to get used twice or four times at the most in a game, is it really a good use of money? I'm assuming offside is not included in this. I'm assuming that offside will remain as it is. But it strikes me that by putting a limit on the amount of time it's being used, that's not necessarily economics. But people might probably say to me that actually VAR only gets used maybe once or twice in this respect a game anyway. So I suppose that's a fair comment. But I'm still not having it, no.
I don't think it's going to be an improvement. I think it's just going to be another thing that's worse. And again, unintended consequences. This is going to be point 10 on Wolves' hit list. And this is a thing that Wolves can hold up in years to come. Say, look, you had your chance. You could have got rid of this awful, awful thing. But by then, they'll be on lots of other different ideas about how to improve it, which will be even more ridiculous than the challenge system. But hey, it'll be with us soon enough before anything. And it'll be in the Championship with this one because it'll be half the price of VAR that we see in the Premier League. And it'll be terrible as well.
So we still hit VAR then?
Well, you know, I mean, if the only ray of sunshine is that if it gets a good number of votes, then someone might come around again in a few years' time and have another go at getting rid of it. And it might encourage fan groups to go, maybe if there'd been a bit more time. I mean, maybe if this had come around a few weeks earlier, then it might have been given time for some of the fan groups to sort of like organise. The fact that this was announced only with one game left and everyone's kind of thinking about the final game of the season and thinking about the actual sport, it might be possible in the future to do a more coordinated campaign with fan groups to make it clear to those that are opposed to VAR, to make it clear to the owners while they're in the stadium and say, look, you know, we want you to vote against VAR. We don't want it. And we want you to vote against it. And we are the primary source of your income. So you should listen to us. What will be interesting is the accountability that comes from this vote, assuming, of course, going back to what we're saying earlier, that we know who voted. I really hope that Crystal Palace votes against VAR. I have a feeling that Steve Parish is broadly against it. But then, you know, he's a practical guy. He's a pragmatic guy. And the Premier League is run by pragmatic people.
Yes, it surely is. There is still some football left to be played this season. It's pretty much all finals now, isn't it? We got the European finals coming up, FA Cup final this weekend, got the Championship playoff final this weekend as well, and the DFB Pokal final. Bayer Leverkusen got two finals this week. They're going to complete an unbeaten season, aren't they? Are they going to do it? Or are K-Town going to spoil the party?
I think it would be really surprising if Kaiserslautern were to beat Leverkusen in the final. They did narrowly avoid relegation from the Bundesliga 2. They're not a very good side. It will be a real shock. Of course it could happen, but it is a real shock. I think what's more likely is Atalanta beating Leverkusen because Atalanta are proper good.
Yeah.
And I think they'll give them a really good game. I hope kind of hope that Leverkusen do it, because it would be just an amazing experience to do an invincible treble, never been done before, it will take a long time to be done again. And that would be amazing to see. But I certainly think that a domestic double is very much on the card. They beat Augsburg on Saturday and they completed their invincible season in the Bundesliga, which is amazing. So now they have to complete the set with a DFB Pokal win and a Europa League win. And I kind of wish them good luck.
Of course, it does leave itself open to a very, very tedious debate on the definition of unbeaten. Because if we get to the final of the Europa League and Atalanta win it on penalties, does the unbeaten side of things, as far as their season's concerned, still hold true? There's lots of people who would argue that they didn't lose. A penalty shootout is separate from that. And there was a lot of people who were saying, of course they lost. They've lost the shootout. Look, they don't have the trophy. It's going off to Italy. Guys, which side of the fence would you be on if it ends up that Atalanta win this on penalties, Jan?
A loss is a loss. It would be, it is what it is, that, isn't it?
Terry?
No, technically it's correct, of course. Yes, they would technically be unbeaten because they wouldn't have lost the game. But the penalty shootout isn't to determine who wins the game. It's to determine as to who goes through to the next round or who lifts the trophy. So technically speaking, yes, but that's certainly not an Athletic article that I would read.
Okay, so that won't be the subject of our final podcast of the season next weekend.
Well, you can be if you like, Graham.
Well, we better leave ourselves something to talk about next week then, because we will be back for one more episode of this season. But for now, for this week, that's all we have time for. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Fellow, it's goodbye.
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 We are at Sound of Football on X, Blue Sky and Instagram, so feel free to get in touch there or head to our website, sofpodcast.com. Don't forget to rate and review us.
If they do get rid of VAR, we'll have to drop down to doing once a month.
Yeah, totally. Nothing to talk about.